Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
The outstanding John Sauber, Center Daily Times, joins us. John, welcome back. It is always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Always appreciate it.
So, John, let's start with Media Day. What did you learn yesterday that maybe that either confirmed some things you already knew or also maybe gave you some new information?
Yeah, that I still hate watching things happen while being rained on. I think that is the first thing. Practice opened yesterday while it downpoured, which was not ideal. Fortunately, moved inside pretty quickly there. But I think a lot of confirming of stuff, right, that I think we all knew that a starter wouldn't be named until probably the end of fall camp. I think the last two starters were named August 23rd and August 24th at quarterback. I don't see any reason to believe that it won't be Drew Aller, but I understand, James Franklin likes to go through the process with all this. James mentioned that eight or nine receivers are competing for spots, which I thought was interesting. I think that number previously was at six or seven, if I remember correctly, or around five or six, somewhere in that range. The fact that they're having guys step up further down the depth chart, I think, is a good sign for Penn State. I think just a lot of affirmation. We know that Chop Robinson and Kalen King are probably going to have special seasons, right? And like, Olu Fashanu is going to have a special season. A lot of guys being talked really highly of in that regard. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, I was talking to Manny Diaz, and he mentioned that everyone wants a Hollywood speech, right, for, from a guy that's a leader, but that's not, like, who guys really look to for leadership. They look to guys who set the right example and everything like that. And, I think he described the quarterbacks in that way. But I thought it was – honestly, the wide receiver thing is going to have my attention for a while. I think it is one of the most fascinating things about the team this year. And I think they're in large part because I'm very high on a few of those guys. I know when we got to practice last Wednesday, I saw Trey Wallace, and I was like, man, he definitely got bigger, right? Like, you could tell that he was – putting work in the strength and conditioning program, and I think that's someone especially that I'm looking forward to watching this year.
Yeah, but just so you know, if it makes you feel better, the last five or six periods were outside yesterday. So
yep.
Yeah, and it showered a bit. Yeah,
yep.
So if it makes you feel better. All right, the depth part of it. James was asked about it. He talked about it extensively yesterday. What was your impression on the depth part of it?
Yeah, I think that is going to be the difference maker for this program this year, right? He's talked about in the past about how they have guys at the top, and then maybe you look further down the depth chart and you don't see the guys that can maybe push those guys and help them get better. I think that's pretty much the case across the board this year, that they've got enough guys to make guys uncomfortable at the top, right? Like even someone like Nick Singleton, who I think everyone would agree is fantastic, can't take a breath, right? Because if he does, Catron Allen's going to be, jumping up to take all those carries. I'm not even, certain that Singleton will be the top guy, right? It could be Allen, theoretically. It could be either of those guys. They'll be splitting so many carries this year. Yeah, I think it's not even necessarily always about, like, okay, the guy down the depth chart is going to contribute a ton. It's the guy down the depth chart can help the guys at the top get better, and I think that's really important. It's the kind of thing that the best teams in the country always have, and I think they have that this year at pretty much every spot. I James did mention safety. It's right now it's a two deep and not a three deep, but that two deep, like he said, is probably better than it was last year, even if it's not – even if you don't have Tig Brown at the top to kind of lead everything there. It's still a very good position for Penn State, and I think you're going to find that there aren't many spots on the field where there are concerns right now. And I can't remember the last time that was the case. I mean, last season we were all wondering what the offensive line was going to look like, and no one's even talking about it now because I think we all expect it to be very good.
There will be an open practice on, I want to say, Saturday. Does that sound right?
Yep.
Which will allow the media to be there. I think you're going to be there for the whole thing. I think.
Yep, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. There will be rules around it, which will be similar to the rules used in training camp for media to cover the NFL. with a full opportunity to see everything, all 24 periods, what will you be looking for going in, and how do you want to cover it? Some people like do statistics. I mean, how do you want to do it?
Yeah, to me, this is this is part of the reason that I love doing this stuff. I think we all love football, right? It's hard to cover the sport if you don't, but you know, I love the game, and I think this is a really good opportunity to just kind of trust your eyes, right? And see what I'm seeing and watching. And I know you mentioned some people do statistics. I'll probably honestly just be taking meticulous notes about, guys and the consistency and everything like that. The chance to see one-on-one reps, I think, is crucial. That's something I'm really looking out for. Hopefully to see, plenty of 11-on-11 reps, which is not something we usually get to see, and seeing how guys fare in those situations. Because, even with one-on-one reps, it's one thing for a defensive end to beat an offensive tackle. It's another for him to do it when there is a running back waiting to chip him or a tight end waiting to chip him, right? It's really interesting when you get into those 11-on-11 situations that we haven't seen since the spring game, that the media hasn't seen since the spring game, at least. So I'm really looking forward to really just, diving in and trying to be as many places as I can at one time to see these guys compete in those situations. And then, like I said, I don't think there's anything more valuable than those 11-on-11 reps when you can see how it all comes together, how guys perform when another player is dependent on their action, when they're on the field. So I think those are going to be the most valuable things we see, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Friday was one of the wildest days in the history of college sports, where on Thursday night it looked like Arizona was all set to go to the Big 12. Tony Petitti had been authorized to at least consider Oregon and Washington because they had already been vetted a year ago.
Right.
And then Friday morning, the story was circulating that the Pac-12 may make it. And then by 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday, everybody looked around and said, where's my lifeboat? Oregon and Washington went to the Big Ten, Arizona State, Utah went to the Big 12. What is your thought on the expansion of the Big Ten to 18 with the addition of Washington and Oregon?
Yeah, I think it's great for the conference, right? I think James Franklin had mentioned this at Big Ten Media Days that, all these conferences are looking for a way when the playoff expands to 12 to try and get 6 teams in, right? Because that's how many you can get in. And I think this really increases Penn State, the rest of the Big Ten's profile of getting as many teams in as possible to the college football playoff. There are teams at the top now across the board that are going to be competing for those types of things, that are positioned to do that. You have obviously Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Now you have USC, who's consistently, I think, going to be at the top as long as Lincoln Riley's there. Washington and Oregon are very competitive. Dan Lanning and Kalen DeBoer are excellent coaches. UCLA is, continuing to improve. So, even just those 4 teams coming into the conference next year all have playoff aspirations. I think you're going to be looking at the Big Ten trying to do what it can to position itself to get as many teams as it can into the college football playoff. Selfishly, I'm going to miss some of the – and, I've seen, athletic directors and everything say that, Washington wants to keep playing the Apple Cup and Oregon wants to keep playing the Civil War against Oregon State, but – I'm going to miss some of those things, right? I think we all know why these decisions are made. They're financially driven. That's, I understand that. But I think from a fan of the sport perspective, and I'm not even usually a traditionalist with these types of things, right? I understand that things change and are always evolving, but it is unfortunate that I think you could lose these fun rivalry games, because it always felt like, to me anyways, and maybe this is just anecdotal, that even when Oregon was good, they could always trip up at the end against Oregon State. And I know there are non-conference games, rivalry games that still happen, right? Like Georgia and Georgia Tech still play every year. I don't think it means these things are going away. But I think when they were in conference, they always had a little bit more juice to them. And selfishly, I'll miss some of those aspects of this realignment phase, because it sure seems like it's not over, right? There are 4 Pac-12, Pac-4 teams, whatever you want to call them, just kind of lingering out there, and we don't know what's going to happen with them. And I think this is probably just the second seismic shift after Texas, Oklahoma, and that there's probably something more coming sooner rather than later.
How closely are you looking and following the ACC drama with Florida State in this vein?
I am not proud of how much of that Florida State Board of Trustees meeting that I watched last week, just because it's all very entertaining, you know, and it's all like just kind of fun to watch it play out. But I do think like Florida State is very clearly angling itself for something. I mean, they're not even angling; they said it right that they will leave if they have to improve their situation. It always has felt like we have been heading towards the Big Ten and the SEC being their own kind of tier, right? Like it almost is already because of the financial disparity. Now the ACC teams being locked into their grant of rights until 2036 is obviously a problem because it's going to cost so much money for them to get out of it. But you know, I think the Big 12 has already fallen behind. The ACC is falling behind financially, and you're just kind of wondering and waiting how long it'll take, you know, Clemson, Florida State to make that move and make a decision. And we saw it with the Pac-12 last week, right? Like, all it took was Oregon and Washington deciding to go, and it completely destabilized the conference. You could argue that that happened when USC and UCLA left, that was the real destabilization, and this was just still the aftershock of it. But I think, you know, all it takes is two top-tier programs to say that they're leaving a conference for the whole thing to get shaken up within a year. So I think that is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, everyone's always looking at Notre Dame, too, right, because they're in the ACC and bunch of sports. But I think, you know, Florida State, Clemson, Notre Dame are kind of the three major players, it seems, left, and that will inevitably end up somewhere else.
Are you sensing this is helping college football's popularity, or are you sensing that it's making people more hesitant about college football and college sports in general?
I think this is probably against conventional wisdom, but I don't know that it's having much impact either way, right? I think this is one of those just kind of realities where we're already so deep into it, right? All of the people that cover it, all of the people that love it and enjoy it, that you just kind of go with the flow. Like, I don't think it's necessarily going to drive anyone away just because those rivalry games happen or because conferences are shifting. But I don't know that it's going to draw anybody in either because, like, you know, suddenly a team is traveling further across the country. So I think really it's – I don't know if there's going to be as much of a fan impact with all of this stuff. I do like – I mean, from the positive upside for fans and for, even media members is you get to travel to new places, right, to go see these teams play. You get to see new stadiums and stuff like that. But I think that's such a small part of it that it's not – you know, overly relevant even. But yeah, I think generally, like, it's, I don't know that there's going to be much impact from that perspective. I think if you love college football, you're probably just kind of disappointed, right? I don't think it means you're going to stop watching or you're going to stop following it or anything like that. But I think there is some level of disappointment and, like, you know, you just kind of wish it hadn't happened.
There's another element to it. I mean, now I think you have a chance in the regular season, as you're building toward a playoff, of some really interesting matchups. I mean, the Big Ten is not going to... I mean, the current Big Ten scheduling model for 24-25, which obviously will have to be tweaked, adjusted, whatever, USC, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, everybody's playing 2 out of 3, right? Because they know the TV networks want that. Now you mix in Washington and Oregon, I think it gives you more options and juice to have bigger games during the regular season.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see more, you know, three-loss teams in the playoff, too, because of that, right? I think there's going to be the acknowledgement of, like, okay, this, Ohio State lost to three teams, but look, all three teams are also in the playoff, right? Like, so it's like, how can you say that they're not worth that while? But, yeah, I think it's going to make the regular season more fun. It's going to make it immensely more valuable because you have to win those games when, there's so many good teams that you're competing against week in and week out. Even if you can get in with 2 or 3 losses now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you will. So I think it is going to increase the value. I do think we're also probably heading toward what's old is new again, right? With we're losing divisions here after this season, but I think they're probably going to have to come back as these conferences expand. Like, it seems like when the inevitable happens and it gets to like 20 or however big it gets, that we see maybe not divisions but like pods within each conference just to kind of make it a little bit easier. But I do think, you know, that's probably it's logistically it just makes more sense to do it that way. But yeah, no, I think the regular season is definitely going to be more fun. There's going to be more high profile matchups, and you know, I am always all for that.
Well, and I've asked this question to many people, and this goes back to the wintertime. I was out at Wisconsin. I was talking with Matt LePay and Mike Lucas and Dave Revson. You know, we were at shoot around. And I said, let me ask you guys something. This is when it was 16. Is finishing sixth good enough? In basketball, it is. Because it gets you the NCAA tournament. Well, now the question is, with two new teams, I'll revise it. Is finishing eighth good enough? Is finishing eighth enough to save a coach's job?
That's a good question. And honestly, I think the answer at this point is probably going to be no, which is, you know, you're still in the top half of the conference, right? Like, it's, you know, you're clearly a good team. If you finished eighth in a conference with, you know, those kind of behemoth type teams in it, I listed off those seven programs that doesn't account for Wisconsin. That doesn't account for, like, if Nebraska has a revival. It doesn't account for, like, all these other programs, Minnesota, Iowa, who are good teams, good programs, you know, that are kind of going to be fighting the uphill battle that we've seen, like Maryland and Rutgers and, you know, at times Michigan State fighting with how good the East was. Now you have that across the whole conference. So I think if you're in one of those, call them the Big Seven for lack of a better term, programs, the three in the Big Ten East and the four incoming from the Pac-12, nothing short of the top seven will be seen as a positive, I think. And honestly, all those teams will be expecting to finish in the top four. So I think it is going to get crowded. You know, that could push for more coaching turnover. Maybe the opposite happens, and it's like, well, it's, you know, these middle to lower tier programs want more stability because they understand how much of an uphill battle it is. But I do think there could be an impact from that standpoint for sure.
And finally, back to Penn State football. I know the open practice is coming up. We discussed some of the things you'll be watching for. What will you watch for when it comes to special teams?
I just want to see these guys kick extensively, right? Like, you want to see, because we usually see like one or two reps right at the beginning of our practice windows that we're allowed to go in on Wednesdays or Thursdays. But I want to see how consistently these guys are striking the ball, especially at kicker with Alex Falcons and Sandra Sahidek. I think there's a possibility that they go like short field goal, long field goal specialist again. I think on some level it would make sense. Falcons was good at extra points this past season and on short field goals at Columbia. Sahidek, we know, has the leg talent to push it out pretty far out there. Unfortunately, I don't think the returner battles have as much juice as they used to. At least kick returner, right? It's you're kind of just back there to fair catch it and get the ball to 25, because usually that's a smart thing to do unless it's a dire situation like late game. Punt returner is always very fun, though. I'm always enjoyed seeing those guys. But I think on some level, too, you get a good idea of where guys at are at with other positions. You know, if you see guys out there as bullets out there on the outside running down on coverage, maybe it's an indication that, you know, they're really showing off their athleticism, and maybe that's something to monitor when they take back to the position that they traditionally play. So I do think there's a lot of value in that too. It is interesting, though. I can't remember the special team spots being pretty much all up for grabs like this. It's fascinating. See, I didn't even mention punter, where Riley Thompson and Alec Paquette are going to be presumably battling for that job. And, you know, Thompson going into his last year of eligibility has the experience. But again, Paquette came in as a really talented punter, so that could be a tight battle for the duration of fall camp.
John, it is always a pleasure. You do great work, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Thank you so much, Steve. Looking forward to seeing you too.